go suck a fat one.
I have an addiction to smut. I'm right-handed, but my ball sack is left-sided. Get the B-Man a double cheeseburger. Take the tip and shut up. Hello, Internet, and welcome to episode 87 of Verbal Graffiti with your host, Brian Glass, a.k.a. the B-Man, the People's Degenerate. Have a snowman for our Christmas decoration today. Again, thank you, Aunt Margaret, for making this as a gift for me years ago. Snowmen remind me of my neighborhood. Neighborhood for life. We had, when I was a child, toddler, tyke, we had about 10 of us, actually more. There was more like 12 or 13 boys, all within three years and grades of each other. We would sled and play in the snow when we were that age. And we would always, anytime we found a snowman that somebody else had made, that other children or other families had made, inevitably we would go sledding, and afterwards we would find that snowman, and we would make a snowman penis to put on the snowman about this area where the penis is on humans as well. It's the things you would do before technology, before our phones took off. But that was always so amusing to us to see just this, there's nothing more pure than parents and kids that make a snowman. And then you have just the worst. Anything worse than a 11-year-old boy, a group of 11-year-old boys is going up and attaching a snowman penis and boobs to it and then running off before you get caught. We would also throw, I think, ice balls at the plow when the plow would come by, because we always hated the plow because we had this long road, a Brookview Drive, that we would go sledding down, and we would have, we'd have wrestling matches as we were going down the hill. Like, we'd try to knock each other off our tubes and our sleds. But when the plow would come by, it would take the snow off of our course, which is the road. And so we would throw snowballs. And there was one time where the plow driver got out of his truck and chased us, and we ran through our friend's backyard, Matt's backyard, into a brook, jumped over the brook to the other side of the neighborhood. And the plow driver, he ran all the way down the brook, but he wouldn't jump over the brook. So that's home court advantage, knowing how to get through a neighborhood without having to use the roads. All right, that's all out of the way. Let's talk about slutty wedding dresses. Yeah, that's always a fun topic. I've noticed I've been doom scrolling through Facebook much more often than I used to. I'm more of an X user, sometimes Instagram, but I've noticed December is becoming a popular wedding month, and I have this theory that the more cleavage the bride shows on her wedding day with her wedding dress, the shorter lived that marriage will be. I saw a wedding dress recently that made me gasp. And that's coming from me. Look at my backdrop. I am used to seeing a lot of cleavage when I open up my phone, but this wedding dress, and I'm not just talking like boob cleavage either. I'm talking like slit, like I don't know what you call the bottom part of the dress, but where you could see like her thigh, like through my iPhone screen, I could smell her vagina. That's how much leg slit she was showing with her wedding dress. If you're wearing, like, automatically, if you go to a wedding and the bride has a strapless dress, like, right away, just take your gift and don't hand, you know, the envelope, like the little bucket or the little like mailbox that you put your envelope with your money in, then don't even bother putting it in, because that marriage ain't gonna last 5 years. The sleeveless dresses, she probably slept with another guy, another Chad the night before or on her bachelorette party. And this whole wedding, the older I get, the more I go to, the more wedding photos that I see, the whole wedding industry is a facade. Like, when you're wearing a wedding dress that could be mistaken for a dress that you'd wear out to the nightclub in Las Vegas, the whole concept of, oh, I am pure, this is our first time together, and you're pissing on all of our faces, all of us who go to church once a year on Christmas Eve. It's almost like you see more cleavage now on wedding dresses than you do when you go out on a night in a town. I don't know. What happened to the veil, too? I don't like when the bride walks down the aisle and I could see all the makeup on her face, blocking all the blemishes that she has on her cheeks and her forehead. I like the veil. I like her to be hidden until they say I do. And then the new husband, lifts up the veil to unveil her purity. And then they kiss and we all cheer. But again, I'm the B-man. I wear pink shirts. I am a romantic at heart. So that's what I like. Yeah, I like a wedding dress where it's all covered. Like, if you want to show chest, that's fine. But now, as soon as there's the slit, the slightest bit of cleavage, that's where the dress, the dress should not go below that. Like, when you just bend over a little bit and I could see down your dress, if that's your wedding dress, I don't know. Maybe I'm conservative. Maybe I'm more traditional, huh? Maybe I like a dress with the veil and even sleeves. There's nothing sexier than a wedding dress where the lady's wearing sleeves with all the, what do you call that? It's not just like white fabric, but it's kind of, it's not lingerie either. So many of you are laughing at me because you know the word I'm thinking of. It's I don't know the word. So we're going to keep it going along. But yeah, slutty wedding dresses. Tis the season to be jolly. All right, this one, not much to say with this one I found on Reddit. Speaking about slutty wedding dresses, there's a theme to this episode, and not weddings, but trashy. Comes from the subreddit, trashy. I'll put the photo here. Can you imagine what kind of crazy you have to be to buy one of these? And one of these is a fake, a positive pregnancy test, whether it's real or fake, I don't know. But it's a fake positive pregnancy test. If you're a babe and you buy, if you're a babe and you purchase a fake positive pregnancy test to give to your man, without questions, you should be put in a straitjacket and tossed into the Pacific Ocean. And if you come back on shore, let's say you're in Mexico, some little boys are playing, they're tossing rocks along the coast trying to make it skip, and they see a dead body with a straitjacket, they should kick you and throw you back in the ocean. They shouldn't, they roll you in and call the police. Just, you don't deserve to be on shore. You are that, I didn't even know this was a thing. Like, I see this, and I just gotta say, get a vasectomy. Every guy, as soon as they hit 16, should get a vasectomy. Save your sperm. It's pretty cheap. You can save your sperm for up to 30 years. I believe the cost is, Chris Williamson said it's 30 $5,000 to save your sperm for 30 years. So every guy should get a vasectomy, become sterile at age 16, save your sperm so you don't have to go through this. Like I have, you know, it's funny. You know, if a babe handed me a fake pregnancy test, immediately I'd ask, well, who did you have sex with? Because I have not had sex this year. So obviously, I am not the father of this this fake baby that you're pretending to have. This is, like, I see, now that I know that fake pregnancy, that there are women, babes, sorry, who are buying fake pregnancy tests on Facebook Marketplace, it makes me understand how the Salem witch trials was a thing, right? Like, women are batshit crazy. Not all of you, a segment of the women population, I can see in the year 1600 how there could be people in Salem, Massachusetts who could look at these crazy women and go, they got to be witches. Like, they cannot be the same species that we are. They must be witches. So let's put them in the river, cover them with wood, put rocks on top of them. If they drown, they're obviously a witch. Actually, I don't think they did that in Salem. I believe they would do that in Europe. The European guys who accused the babes of being witches in Europe, that's what they do. They would drown them with rocks. They wouldn't do it. It was Salem. I think it was just a trial. But you get the point. Like, there is a point where a woman does something so insane, so irrational, so crazy, like buying a fake pregnant positive test, that you have to question whether or not this is an actual human being or if this is a witch. Get a vasectomy right now. All the Johns who are watching or listening to this right now, what should we do? All right, let's break this down. Right? If you give a man, you give your John a fake pregnancy test, there's probably two reasons. One, you want to marry him, so you want to get a shotgun wedding, you fake being pregnant. More likely than not, though, you want abortion money. Like, you need money quick. Let's say you're going to a Death Cab for Cutie concert. The tickets are $350. Well, an abortion costs $450. So I'll fake a pregnancy, force my boy toy, who's putting hot ones in me, to pay for a fake abortion. I'll take that $450, buy the Death Cab for Cutie tickets for $350, have $100 left over to buy a t-shirt, merchandise, a couple of drinks with the gals at the concert. Hey, sometimes you gotta go to a concert and you don't have the funds, so you gotta come up with the funds. So you gotta take your moral compass, push it aside, and fake a pregnancy to get the money from your boy toy. So I'm not even hating on a lady or a babe for doing this. You know, life is cruel. There's got to be preventative measures that guys can take to not get caught up in a fake pregnancy scandal. Like, there has to be enough technology today where, whether it's the mailman, the Amazon driver, the UPS driver, whatever, like the truck driver with the mail and packages, there's got to be some type of technology or X-ray where the mailman or the Amazon driver can, like, scan the package and see if there is a fake pregnancy test within the package. That way, he can tip off the guy at the house or the address and go, hey, just so you know, there's a fake positive test in this box. Do with it what you will. But from one guy to another, from one John to another John, you got to know you're in for some shit. So there's got to be, like, if we could go to Mars, we can certainly look within a package, unopened package, and see if there's a fake positive pregnancy test. We got to be able to do that. This is so... Because as a guy, I've never experienced this. Like I said, I didn't even know this was a thing. Fake positive pregnancy tests that you could buy online on Facebook Marketplace. Like, there's got to be a way where one guy to another where we could help each other. Because I know there are probably guys who have experienced this, especially if you're in the military or live near a military base. I've just done some research on this topic. It seems like this is quite common in Virginia and San Diego and Oahu, where there were, you know, a lot of military bases. This is a popular thing where, like, we got to have some type of charity or something where we can donate money and help out guys that are, you know, ta-da, I'm pregnant, but I'm not pregnant, so can you please give me $400 for that abortion that I'm not going to get, but I'm going to go see Dead Cat for Cutie or whatever the fuck it is you're going to do with that $400 to $500. It's a sad lugubrious world that we're living in right now. For a bit more uplifting, I want to be a little bit more uplifting. So let's go. Let's just throw this aside. Like in the Pacific Ocean with the ladies, the babes that are buying these, and let's go look at some photos. Pow pow, we back. Episode 87, segment 2. 8 + 7 = 15, which is an okay number. For some reason, I thought for a moment there that 8 + 7 = 13, which it does not. Like I said, it equals 15. But 13 is one of those numbers I try to avoid because I have, it has nothing to do with luck. My OCD, which I've mentioned here and there during this project, Verbal Graffiti, I have crippling OCD, obsessive compulsive disorder, with counting and touching. So there are certain, when I count, there are certain numbers I try to avoid. Usually the number 8 is my most fearful number. Also, 7, 13, and 6. I don't like the number 6 because of, like, hell, 666. But also with larger numbers, let's say, for example, let's throw a number, like 1,554. If I could, with the math of those individual numbers, if I can make a number, one of those single digit numbers that I try to avoid, like 8 or 6 or 7, I'll try to avoid that larger number as well. So with those larger numbers, for instance, 87, I will add and subtract them and multiply them together in my head. And if it lands on one of those evil numbers that I try not to step on or touch a certain number of times, I will actively try to avoid that number. Whoa, my brain is weird. Wow, OCD really fucks up your head. All right, since I shit on slutty brides the first segment, to be fair, it's time to shit and be judgmental of the grooms to be, who are standing there in front of the crowd or the church or the in front of the loved ones, you know, for the ceremony. What bothers me about the johns who are getting married, the grooms and the groomsmen, is they're wearing their shoes. Because a lot of the johns who are getting married, they'll rent the shoes and the suit from clothing rental place. And I always find that off-putting because it's so, what bothers me about that is that there was another groom that was wearing that last week, and there will be another groom that will wear it next week. So it's real, there's nothing about that suit, and especially those shoes, because they're so cheap, because it'll pretend to be leather, brown leather, or it'll be way too shiny, so it's, you know, it's not real black leather, and the soles are so thin that there's no way that's Goodyear welted, and you could tell they're falling apart. It's really, you're just in an assembly line. It's like, oh, you're the groom now. There was a groom last week, and then you'll move aside, and there'll be a groom wearing the same gaudy, just generic suit that doesn't really, that's not tailored to you next week, as he's giving away his freedom to his slutty bride, showing the cleavage to family and friends, and probably she'll probably be in the bathroom. Like, all right, let's move along, shall we? Enough wedding talk for episode 87. 8 + 7 = 15, but then 1 + 5 = 15, that equals 6, which is a number I don't like. So maybe I don't like the number 87. That's how my OCD works. That's why sometimes it takes me many minutes to leave the house when I should just leave right away. All right. This one comes from the subreddit Popeyes. My local Popeyes caught on fire. Oh, no. I'm super autistic. Love starting a sentence off that way. I am super autistic, and I eat Popeyes like 3 times a week. It reminds me of my childhood, not living in Louisiana anymore. I've been so stressed out about this. I sympathize with this guy. You know, you can laugh at this guy all you want. Yeah, but the fact is, any John who's eating at Popeyes 3+ times a week, that is a gentleman. That's near his breaking point. So when he just admits that he's autistic and he eats Popeyes multiple times a week, then he goes to his Popeyes, like he goes through the drive-thru expecting to get like a 2-piece combo. And then, you know, he goes to the drive-thru, but the building is on the ground. It's not erect anymore. That might be his breaking point. And the fact that he's gone to Reddit to tell us he's autistic and he doesn't know what to do, I fear for this man. I wish he would give us his contact info so that we could put in a wellness check and call the local police and have them go check on him. Because I fear for his safety. I fear for his life. And I do, you know, I do sympathize with this guy. Yeah. Maybe, you know, I never really thought, maybe I am autistic because I am the same way. I think the same way as this guy in that not so much with Popeyes, although there is a Popeyes in a town in which I reside but it's not open anymore. Like, it went out of business. So there will be times when I'll drive by that Popeyes. I'll be like, oh, man, I'd really like a chicken sandwich right now. I like a bucket. I really like their French fries, actually, because they're thick and a little bit spicy. But and then you drive by, like, oh, no, it's not open. And I get a little deflated. But, you know, I get a little deflated. And I know that it's out of business. But this guy going there expecting it to be open, eating it 3 times a week, and then it just arson. Someone lit it on fire. It's no longer there. What I was getting at, all right, roll it all back around, B-Man. I like my day to be planned. Spontaneity is not a personality trait that I have. I don't enjoy spontaneity. I like waking up in the morning and knowing what it is I'm going to do that day. I like to know all the tasks from the beginning of the day till the end of the day when I'm doom scrolling on my phone in bed. I like to know. I don't like any surprises. If something happens and my day gets turned awry and I have to do fulfill a task or go do an errand that I didn't know I was going to have to do, or if there's an emergency and you know, I have to go to a hospital to go check on somebody, or you know, there's just something happens throughout the day that I had not planned for. That's very upsetting is not the word, but it's discombobulated. It ruins my whole day because the plan has gone awry, and I like my day to be structured. And when it gets unstructured, and you know, you pull the piece out of Jenga, and that's basically what happens with my mind. I have a day, I have it planned, but one of those plans is a Jenga board. It gets pulled out, and then my whole mind just kind of crumbles, right? And then, yeah, I'll build it back up, and I'll be okay tomorrow. But for that day, When something goes, something's out of the plan happens. I not anxiety, but there is an angst that I feel inside of me, my inside my gut when that happens. So maybe I am autistic because I really do sympathize with our John who eats at Popeyes 3 days a week. That's tough. He's in a real tough predicament right now because there's so many. There are all these people in Gaza who are complaining that their house got bombed and now they're homeless and they have family and friends who lost a limb or maybe lost their life. But none of those people in Gaza have ever gone to a Popeyes expecting to get a biscuit and not able to get that biscuit because Popeyes is no longer there. That's a feeling of hopelessness that even those people in Gaza have never felt. So all the people in Gaza should shut the F up and have some sympathy for our guy who no longer has his Popeyes, because that is a loss that maybe you'll never be able to recover from. Like, you could rebuild a building, but rebuilding a Popeyes, probably not going to happen, because I'm guessing... I'm suspecting that this Popeyes, it was an inside job. It was arson. There's actually a slur term I was going to use, but I'm not going to use that because I'm a good boy. But, there's probably an employee who just, went postal, lit the building on fire, or maybe it was insurance fraud, and whoever they had the franchise that Popeyes lit it to get the insurance. So I'm guessing whatever the cause of this fire, which was nefarious in nature, me guessing here, is not going to be rebuilt. So that Popeyes is not coming back. So you'll have to find somewhere else to eat at 3 times a week. And when you're used to Popeyes chicken, nothing else hits as hard as Popeyes. Chick-fil-A, I think their chicken sandwich is wildly overrated. I mean, literally, it's spicy chicken on 2 pieces of bread on a bun. That's all they give you. Maybe a pickle. It leaves me dry. There's nothing there. McDonald's is fine, but it ain't Popeyes. I fucked hard with KFC as a child, but I don't even know if KFCs even exist. All the other fast food joints. You're gonna have to find a local place, maybe a local diner. You'd be surprised. Especially if you're in the Northeast, there are some diners that fuck hard with chicken parm. People laugh at me, but there's this Neptune Diner that they have perhaps the best chicken parm I've ever had. And they give you a side of spaghetti with sauce with the bread too. And I might go there right now after this episode. But this guy, he's feeling it hard. I want all the viewers of Verbal Graffiti to put a prayer, to put out one of those candles, a memorial candle for the loss of this guy's Popeyes. And if you're listening to this, we're grieving with you in your moment of your moment of loss. And we hope nothing for the best for you. We're happy that you're able to live life with autism as well as you can. Obviously, your diet, you're not going hungry. You have a good stomach to you. But yeah, find a new spot. And just remember the good day. Right now you're going through a tough point, but there will be a point in your life where you'll be able to look back at all the meals you had at Popeyes with fondness. Again, time heals all wounds. Now on to continue reading The Salesman's Wife, by the legendary author, John Lawrence. We are on the top of page, what page is it? Page 41, if you're reading along. We'll read 2 pages together. She began to run her hands all over his body, savoring his nakedness as his rising tide of sensuality began to waft through her body. Her hand explored every hard, bulging muscle and ridge of his tall frame, and she grew more and more excited. She wanted to touch every part of his body, his face, his skin, his chest, his hips, his genitals, his cock. But as she grasped his swollen penis again, with hot eagerness, he drew her hands away. "Not now, not now," he murmured. "Now you must let me touch you." He reached out and let his hands rest on the soft, subtle mounds of her breast, kneading them slowly, relishing the silky texture of her skin and the resilience of the pliant flesh. He squeezed her nipples lightly, and Pamela shivered with delight. Then he slid his palms sensually down her smooth body, over the trembling plane of her stomach, and down to the slim, white hips. With infinite slowness, he let his fingers tangle themselves in her pubic hair, moving teasingly down toward the fleshy slit. At that moment, however, Pamela suddenly felt herself again, once again seized with guilt. Suddenly, she became aware that she, a married woman, was allowing a strange man to fondle her naked body without any resistance on her part. "No," she moaned suddenly, "I can't." "Relax," the doctor replied softly. "You have nothing to worry about." Sensing her fear, he took his hand away from her pubic mound and guided her to the velvet-covered couch. "Lie down here," he said, "and relax." She lay back on the couch and closed her eyes. Almost immediately, she felt completely lost in the radiant glow as a potent drug took hold of her again. "Just let yourself drift, float on the cloud, high above the earth," he whispered. "Relax and float away. There's nothing to be afraid of, nothing in the world." Pamela did as he instructed, and her body began to drift in a pleasant dream world. She was enchanted, a fairy princess in the magic kingdom, light and giddy. "That's it," he said, "that's it. Let yourself love, Pamela, and let yourself be loved, be loved." His words echoed and re-echoed in her brain. Be loved, be loved. She wanted more than anything in the world at that moment to be loved. She felt far away from the real world, transported to a paradise. And she was being loved. "Yes," she moaned. "Yes." Carlsberg let his hands play gently over her face, and the young housewife became warmly aroused by his artful strokes. He massaged her temples, her eyelids, and her cheeks. Then slowly he let his fingers slide down the rosy, succulent mounds of her breast. His own body was alive with lewd excitement, and his cock throbbed achingly for release. Deftly, he straddled her with his knees on either side of her hips. Go suck a fat one.